I'm Brandi Cruz, and this is Politics Unpacked. Politics Unpacked is brought to you by our friends at Future 42. Stay and fight. Sign up for their newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to do just that and get involved in the political process in Washington State. Welcome to Politics Unpacked, where we unpack what happened during the week during the legislative session in Olympia. Two bills dubbed initiative killers are now dead for the legislative session. The bills, Senate Bill 5973 and House Bill 2259, would have complicated the initiative process in two key ways. It would have prevented groups from paying signature gatherers on a per signature basis. It also would have required people who want to run a voter initiative to go out and collect 1,000 signatures to show that there is some level of support for the initiative before they actually start the formal process. Democrats who push these bills are accused of trying to complicate the constitutionally protected right to initiative by just adding extra steps. But the bills failed to advance. Brian Haywood with Let's Go Washington put out a statement saying the attempt by the legislature to kneecap the people's initiative process was both shameless and arrogant. The demise this week of the initiative killer bills is a rare win for the people of Washington state. The bills would have chilled participation in our state's initiative process with penalties making citizens and voters think twice before participating in the signature gathering process. He went on to say thousands immediately spoke out against the bill and continued to express concern. We're glad to see that their voices were loud enough to shame the legislature into pulling the bill. This is a hard-earned victory protecting one of the few tools voters have left to fight against an otherwise unchecked legislature. Now, this is the second year in a row that Democrats have tried to run bills like these and have not been successful, in part because the head of the state's election system, a Democrat, Secretary of State Steve Hobbs, has sided with Republicans in pushing back against the proposals. Also this week, a little bit of a surprise move on the anti-fraud front. You'll recall we aired on Undivided a whistleblower report back at the end of October that shed light on self-dealing within the state's community reinvestment program. This is a $260 million fund that sought to provide grants to BIPOC nonprofits to get money out to community members of color for things like down payment assistance, paying off personal credit card debts, starting businesses, getting legal help, etc. And what our whistleblower found and what our investigation confirmed is that at those BIPOC nonprofits, they were often using the money to help themselves or their family members or their employees, or even shuffling the money to other nonprofits that they were the leaders of. So you'll recall that we thought the effort to put some fraud protections in place as a result of our whistleblower report was dead for the session. Republicans had run two bills. One of them was Senate Bill 6205, and it would have said basically that if you're one of these nonprofits that are contracted with the state to dole out these funds, you can't use the money on yourself. You can't use the money on your employees or your family members. That bill didn't advance in the Senate. And then there was Senate Bill 6167 that would have prohibited people from stacking down payment assistance programs. So there's more than one program in the state of Washington that helps homebuyers of color get down payment assistance. There's the Community Reinvestment Program, and then there's the Covenant Homeownership Program. And our whistleblower report revealed that in several cases, people were getting multiple grants from multiple different nonprofits. In one instance, a woman got $350,000 in essentially free money from taxpayers toward the purchase of a $425,000 home, and she ended up with a mortgage of just around $80,000. And so there was concern that the program should be used to help more people rather than helping a select few, but that bill, Senate Bill 6167, didn't go anywhere. So again, we thought that that effort to protect against self-dealing and fraud was dead for the session. But then something surprising happened. Democrats over in the House were running a bill about the Community Reinvestment Program and essentially about the future of the program and where funds would be focused moving forward. But in that bill, they worked with Republicans to add some language that would prevent the kind of self-dealing that we reported on. So House Bill 2523, thanks to bipartisan work, now has this language in it. The department must prohibit an organization that receives a grant under this section from distributing the funds to an officer who has an interest in or receives any compensation from the recipient organization, a family member of an officer, or a business or nonprofit owned or managed by an officer who has an interest in or receives any compensation from the recipient organization. investigation. And so that gets right at the heart of what our whistleblower report was all about. There is also an element of this bill that says that the Washington State Institute for Public Policy needs to conduct research and analyze the outcomes of this program, who the money's going to, how it's being spent, etc. So it doesn't say the word audit, but it's basically putting an auditing function in the program. And this bill passed off the floor of the House on a bipartisan basis. It had the support of State Representative Christine Reeves, a Democrat.
When we put a program into statute, we are saying that it must operate transparently, it must be measured, and it must withstand public scrutiny. It must continue to earn the trust of this body, Mr. Speaker, and the people of Washington State. We piloted it, we measured it, it's working. Today, Mr. Speaker, I'm asking you to join me in voting yes for responsible government that promotes restorative justice, data-informed policy that puts people first, and clear results that help communities thrive.
State Representative Travis Couture, a Republican, also voted in support of it, and he was key to getting Democrats to agree to add this language.
I'm just really appreciative of the accountability and sideboards and that were put into the striking amendment, and also some of the protections for the community that the Community Reinvestment Program is supposed to serve, and also protections for whistleblowers when things do go wrong. And that's the kind of accountability we should expect from the largest grant in state history.
Corey Orvold, who was the whistleblower at the center of our story, came out with a statement after the bill passed in the House. She said, I am encouraged to see the House pass this important legislation. It is essential these funds reach the community members they were created to support, not individuals connected to the organizations responsible for distributing them. The bill now goes to the Senate for consideration. Taxes, taxes, taxes continues to be the big topic in Olympia. So the income tax, which is being billed as a tax on millionaires, is going to have a big hearing in the House this week. Meanwhile, Governor Bob Ferguson is talking about what changes he needs to see to the bill in order to sign it.
I've said multiple times that any bill I sign must send a significant percentage of the revenue back to Washington families and small business owners. We are not there yet, and we are still not close to being there. This bill must be laser focused on making life more affordable for Washingtonians and continuing to improve areas like K-12 education.
He said specifically he wants to see some more tax breaks in there for businesses.
We should use $1 billion of this new revenue to give small business owners a significant, that's an understatement, tax break. That means dramatically increasing the small business tax credit, which effectively wipes out B&O tax on the first $2.5 million in total revenue for that business.
Now, it's worth noting that although he's talking about tax breaks for businesses as part of the proposed millionaires tax, last year, Governor Bob Ferguson passed the largest tax increase in state history into law, much of that on the backs of the small businesses he's now saying that he wants to help. The other idea that he has as part of sort of offsetting whatever tax revenue might come in from the millionaires tax are two tax holidays.
We also need more sales tax relief. Sales tax hits Washingtonians hard because it's the same for everybody, regardless of your ability to afford it and pay for it. We all have essentials we need to purchase. So I'm proposing the following. First, let's create a sales tax holiday. 18 states do this already, where for a limited period of time, people can buy certain items without paying any sales tax at all. A sales tax holiday is understood by the public and would apply to all Washingtonians. My proposal includes two sales tax holidays, 1 3-day weekend, 1 2-day holiday. During that time, there'd be no sales tax on items less than $1,000. That would put approximately $141 million back in the pockets of Washingtonians every single year.
And I know that that last point has been a little frustrating for Republican lawmakers who have tried and failed to introduce some sales tax breaks in the last two sessions. For instance, last year, Republicans tried to introduce a short sales tax holiday on back-to-school supplies. Democrats rejected that effort. And then this session, as part of the millionaire's tax proposal, Republicans tried to introduce a sales tax break on diapers.
A tax break for something like diapers could really be beneficial to these families struggling to feed their kids, struggling to get them to a daycare.
It pales in comparison to the tax increase. It's a very small percentage. And frankly, while I agree that some of these tax breaks for large corporations that are built into the bill and built into the amendments will ultimately have some impact on regular folks in Washington, they're two or three steps removed. They're mostly aimed at large corporations. This amendment would get directly after the cost of living in our state.
I think we ought to go even farther than that and exempt everything that has to do with taking care of babies, 5 years old and under, strollers, backpacks, Desitin, baby bottles, etc. That's the kind of tax relief we should be looking instead of raising taxes. So I urge your support on this amendment.
But Democrats rejected that amendment.
There are no further remarks. The question before the Senate is adoption of amendment number 0694. As many are in favor, will signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Appear to have it. The noes have it. The amendment is not adopted.
Meanwhile, a little bit more intrigue around the proposed millionaires tax. So remember when I asked Governor Bob Ferguson this?
There is some angst about the free agency and how this could impact free agency and good players come to Seattle, whether it's football or baseball, and kind of having a Dwayne Wade to Miami sort of situation where the team doesn't do as well and business suffers as a result. So how concerned are you about that, given there's sort of a there is history of players moving from less tax-friendly states to more tax-friendly states.
Sure. So I've not seen that specifically. Brandy, have we take a look at it? Aware generally of that issue, I'd say. I think what I'd say is that, you know, most states have an income tax. And so football players still play in states where there is an income tax. But that said, I think what I would say is that from my standpoint, you know, and I think this is true for all of us who are working on this, by the way, is that we're trying to be thoughtful about what's the amount and who's paying it. What are the impacts of that? I had a meeting yesterday with folks in the business community to talk about that. So we're certainly aware of that. And so we're going to just have to try and structure this in a way that makes the most sense, that is the most fair to address the challenges we're facing. And I'll check more into that as well.
Well, it turns out the millionaires tax is a pretty big concern for the commissioner of the NBA, who last week spoke with Governor Bob Ferguson by phone. According to some internal documents obtained by Ari Hoffman, a host at KVI, NBA Commissioner Adam Silver let the state of Washington know that they are very committed to bringing the Sonics back to Seattle. However, they have concerns with, quote, the high cost of maintaining a basketball team, challenges posed by the millionaire's tax on recruiting top players, and whether Seattle remains an attractive and investor-friendly environment. They noted recent investor relocations to Florida without specifying any names. So it does seem like there is some there to the question about whether the millionaire's tax could cause a problem for the return of the Seattle Supersonics and could potentially cause a problem now that the Seattle Seahawks are up for sale. That has been Politics Unpacked. Thanks for joining us. Politics Unpacked is brought to you by our friends at Future 42. Stay and fight. Sign up for their newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to do just that and get involved in the political process in Washington State. And to catch regular episodes of Undivided Monday through Thursday, make sure to become a subscriber at UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com, and follow us across all social media platforms.